Football on Off the Ball.
With Sky. Don't miss West Ham versus Liverpool on Super Sunday. Live only on Sky Sports.
Right, you are welcome along to Thursday's football show. I'm joined on the line by Sam Lee of The Athletic to talk Manchester City ahead of this weekend's Manchester derby. How are you keeping, Sam?
Yeah, not too bad, cheers. Not too bad. Always a load of games going on. Narrative's changing all the time, but yeah, not too bad. Always interesting.
This Saturday could be very interesting because Manchester United in absolute crisis, yet win the Manchester derby, as they have tended to do in recent years, and they're level on points with City.
God, I hadn't even realised that. It wouldn't surprise me at all if they did win. Like you say, they've got a good record. It's funny, actually. I think if United had played City a couple of weeks ago and they'd been as open and, you know, trying to go for it and be gung-ho, they'd probably got torn to pieces. And then if they'd played Liverpool this weekend, they'd tighten up. So I think City are going to suffer a bit because surely they won't be so open against City. And to be fair, they haven't been in the last few years, and it's worked out really well for them. But yeah, if they were to be level on points with City, that really would make you think, wouldn't it?
It's a peculiar time at Manchester City because the defeat to Crystal Palace was a second of the season. It means they're now 5 points behind Chelsea. There have been flashes of absolute brilliance, and you've been writing about this in The Athletic, about there have been games where they've been scoring 6, 5, 4, but there have also been half a dozen games where they haven't scored at all, and they've moved between being the Manchester City of getting to a record point total in the Premier League and been at their very best, and also at times just been pretty dull and pedestrian and nowhere near the intensity that we'd expect from a Pep Guardiola Manchester City team. What is going on?
It's difficult. And that's kind of the fun of this job going into a new season, trying to work out what the team you're covering is doing, why they're doing it, how they're doing it, if is anything new, is it better, is it worse? And we're still trying to unpick it, really. Now we're at the stage of the season, 10 games in, where you start looking at the table. Like I say, if they were to be on the same point as United after this weekend, that would be remarkable, really. Because I would still say, and I would argue until the cows come home, that City are a much better team than United. But the fact there's only 3 points in it is quite remarkable. What's going on? I don't think, and again, I could be wrong, we're still in this working out stage. I don't think they're bad. I don't think they're having a bad season. I don't even think that they're having the kind of season like they did 2 years ago, if you remember, when Liverpool won it. And City, they'd win, I don't know, 2 or 3 games, and then they'd drop points. And they'd look really quite, I don't know, porous, I suppose. Open on the counter-attack, you know, pedestrian in attack. And then they'd go on the cycle again, and they'd win a couple of games, then lose one, and win a couple of games, draw one. And he never quite knew where they stood. And while Liverpool were running away with it, you know, they were never going to catch up. I don't think it's going to be the same, even though there have been a few games, like you say, where they haven't scored goals. I'm thinking the way that Southampton disrupted them and the way that Crystal Palace disrupted them, on the one hand, it doesn't bode well, because if you think if they could do it, then there's probably another 4, 5, 6, 7 teams in the Premier League that could maybe do it in the same way, because there's a lot of coaches now who like to press, you like to get in your faces, and they know what to do when they've got the ball. But on the other hand, I'm thinking it's a good opportunity for Guardiola to get the players in on the training ground and say, look, you might not believe me when it happened after Southampton, but it's happened again after Palace. This is what they did. This is what we need to do to get around that. And maybe they can learn from it, because the other thing I said was a couple of years ago, they were so open on the counter-attack. And okay, there's been a bit of bad defending, but I don't think they're so open. I don't think they're that porous. And even if they do struggle to score goals, it'd be more like last season when they still might win the game 1-0 because they're solid at the back and they'll probably take the chance at some point. So I think they are more solid than a couple of years ago. But yeah, it's been an interesting season. The last thing I'd say is the 5-point gap to Chelsea, it's not too big. But obviously, if the result doesn't go their way at the weekend, they might start to worry a bit. But 5 points, it can easily go the other way.
And we shouldn't underestimate the genius of Guardiola at any stage to be able to come up with something that transforms this. Because when we have to look at last season, where Manchester City started last season quite slowly as well. First third of the season did very little. Yes, that middle third went on this 14-game winning streak that just won them the title, blitzed absolutely everybody, made that sort of tactical switch that suddenly João Cancelo for a 2-month period became the most influential player in the Premier League, was a full-back but a central midfielder. Ilkay Gundogan went to an entirely different level. is there any signs that something like that is coming from Guardiola, that he's looking to make that sort of a tactical change?
I don't think so. But also, I don't really think that it needs to. At the start of last season, they were in a bit of a malaise, really. It looked like the wheels could fall off. That was kind of the season I'm talking about, two seasons ago, when they were a bit patchy. The way that finished, that was after, you know, the pandemic halted things. It started again. They went to the Champions League and they lost to Lyon on the counter-attack, being too open. And then they started the season again just a few weeks later, and it seemed like that patchy season had carried on. And it was petering it out. It was Guardiola's last year of his contract at that point. It looked like it could have easily gone. And you mentioned the genius of him, but also the quality players he's got. They made a few changes, as you mentioned, and turned it around. And that was a big dramatic change, and it needed to be a big dramatic change. I don't think it needs to be now. They could do with a cutting edge. Obviously, a lot's been made of a striker, and it would definitely give them an extra edge. But just because, you know, they might have signed Harry Kane or Cristiano Ronaldo or whoever else, even if they were on the pitch, it wouldn't mean, you know, Mahrez wasn't missing chances, Foden wasn't missing chances, Sterling wasn't missing. The others need to make a bit of a step up. So the only thing, well, the main thing would be to make that step up in front of goal, to take more of their chances, because they still do, by and large, create a lot.
It does feel as though the number nine issue is one we're going to keep coming back to, though, because it's okay when Gabriel Jesus is there. I know Pep Guardiola mightn't see him as a traditional number nine. He's a bit too deep-lying at times for that. But he has at times played Jack Grealish as a false nine. There have been periods of games where Phil Foden has gone into position.
Yeah.
And they look totally at sea. And if Manchester City don't win the title this season, it will be a sliding doors moment, whether it was Harry Kane or Cristiano Ronaldo, that will feel as though it was the difference between them being a title-winning team and not being a title-winning team.
Probably, yeah. I mean, if you look at it, and basically it's the easiest conclusion to draw, and there is truth in it. But it is the easiest conclusion to draw, because you look at the fact that they've gone five games in all competitions, not including the Community Shield, where they've not scored this season, and they didn't sign a striker, and Guardiola's admitted that without a striker it makes things a bit harder. So you put all that together and you just say, okay, well, if you'd bought one, you'd probably have won the league. And it's easy to understand that. I mean, there's an argument that they played the best football or the most effective football of Guardiola's tenure without one. Because if you think last season, they did that great turnaround from Christmas onwards with that winning run that you mentioned. They got to the Champions League final and looked very comfortable doing so without a striker. So does that give them more control? And the way that Guardiola's playing, that's an interesting one. Is he kind of going for a bit less flair and a bit more? I don't like to say substance, because, you know, Riyad Mahrez does do a lot of work in back. He's really improved on that. But if you think that Gabriel Jesus has played most of the games on the right hand side, he got a couple of assists early on. But since then, it's just been incredible work rate. I've been in stadiums where you see him sprinting back all the way, and you think, would he do that? Would he play Jesus against United at Old Trafford, especially if he's worried about Luke Shaw? I could see that, and you just think, not just is the false nine thing the go-to way of playing now. So you've got a bit less cutting edge, but you've got basically another midfielder in there, which obviously, you know, Guardiola loves extra midfielders, more overloads, more domination of the game. But it's not just coming from the false nine. You've also got Grealish, who is arguably another midfielder. So you've got the three midfielders you go with anyway. Let's say Rodri, Bernardo Silva and Gundogan. Last season, the false nine was De Bruyne. You had Foden on the left. That's basically five central midfielders. Cancelo, you've mentioned, who's like a central midfielder playmaker. Six. You've got the two centre-backs who, you know, they don't have to do the majority of making things happen. But when they've got the ball inside the opposition half, you know, they can make direct passes through the lines or they can go out wide. So you wouldn't quite say they've got eight central midfielders there, but you'd probably say six. Two extremely comfortable on the ball. Kyle Walker, who's, you know, good enough on the ball and there for the counter-attacks. And then you've got the right winger, who in previous seasons with Mahrez, bringing that bit of destability to it, to dribble past men and score goals out of nothing. But now you've got Jesus, who's kind of more hard-working and not quite got the flair of Mahrez. And you're thinking, these are all players who work hard and keep the ball. And is that the kind of team that Guardiola wants? And is that the answer, going back to what I was saying two seasons ago about those counter-attacks? Is that how he stopped them? And I think it is. So the interesting thing about City this season is they're very, very stable. And maybe that's partly why, to go back to the number nine debate, they're also not scoring quite so many goals. Because if you're picking guys who are more suited to be central midfielders, how many central midfielders have got that knack to score 20, 25 goals a season? They're very rare. They're more technical players, the ones Guardiola's got. They can play in the small spaces and keep the ball forever. Maybe that's why they're not taking the chances. And then maybe that's why a number nine wouldn't necessarily have fixed things if Guardiola's trying to play this stable game.
Could you substitute stable for dull? It does feel a little bit dull at times.
Some games. In terms of entertainment, for sure. I think you've got to take into account. So Guardiola said last night, he was in a funny mood. But he said last night, you know, the first 20 minutes were some of the best football they've played. And, you know, you can never quite trust him when he's dishing out the praise because he's very, you know, fulsome, isn't he? Whether he's talking about his own players or opposition or whatever. And you think, okay, you know, is Nathan Redmond really the best left back you've ever played against? That kind of thing. But I think we've got to remember, they were playing against six at the back last night. So how entertaining is the game going to be if one team doesn't want to play? Like how can you rip them apart on the counter-attack? Can you open up that many spaces if you're playing against a team of six at the back? And it's not just Bruges that will do that. You know, there's plenty of teams have come. They've played five at the back. Then the central midfielders will drop in. And they're defending the edge of the penalty area. Where are the spaces there? And I know the onus is on, you know, one of the richest teams in the world with probably the strongest squad in the world and the best manager, in my opinion, to find those solutions. And generally they do. But it is very difficult. It is very difficult to play against teams like that. And very few teams have to play against teams that defend so much because a lot of them just think, well, it's City. What else are we going to do? And the interesting thing has been the way the Southampton and Palace have kind of got in their faces and made things difficult for them. But then I'll give you that. Once they've thrown City off their rhythm, they have been, I wouldn't say dull, actually, because the game's been quite open and up and down. But it's certainly not been City at their best. But yeah, if we're saying dull, then I think we need to take into account a lot of the other teams are not playing great football.
Yeah.
Team 33.
Abysmal. The worst thing I can say about it was that, yeah, there were loud, loud boos at halftime, but they were almost being clapped off at full time because the fans nearly felt sorry for them.
Team 33. Live every Friday night on OTV Sports Radio. Download the podcast now in the OTV Sports app.
What's going on with Kevin De Bruyne? Because when I think about Manchester City being a bit pedestrian or dull, I was over recently at the Etihad for the Burnley match and De Bruyne got a goal that day, but he just seemed to be playing within himself, never takes a risk. It is that constant, simple, possession-based football, maybe waiting for the opposition to make a mistake, and they won that game 2-0 and he got his goal, so maybe that was the game plan. But it wasn't the Kevin De Bruyne who a couple of years ago felt as though he was about to become maybe the best player in the world.
Yeah, it's the injuries. He had the ankle injury, didn't he? If you remember, against Portugal when he was playing for Belgium in the Euros, then he took the injections to play against Italy. Basically, it was a big mistake. Shouldn't have happened. And just lasting effects from that, really. So it took him a while to start the season in terms of fitness because he was recovering from that. But I don't know if it's now a mental thing or a physical thing or both. But it's the lasting effects of that injury. And also, he got that concussion in the Champions League final. I'm certainly no brain surgeon, but that they can have a lasting impact as well. I'm not sure if it is the case with De Bruyne in that sense. But I know that's been a problem for other footballers after they get concussion. It's not a bounce back and get to your old self straight away. And if you think about the decision-making of De Bruyne, you mentioned waiting for things to happen. With De Bruyne, he's normally forcing the issue, isn't he? But he's not just spamming the balls into the box and seeing what happens. There's a space there, and all of a sudden, he's put the ball through it perfectly. That's why I think he looks very different now, because even when he does try that, and he has, it's not quite come off. But basically, seemingly, you know, from people around the situation, it's lasting effects of that injury. And it might be the case for, I don't know, until the new year, perhaps.
I was reading your article where you were trying to predict the team for the Manchester Derby.
I don't envy anybody.
Reading
the article or picking the team.
Well, exactly, because it's one of the great things of Manchester City is there's just so many options that he can constantly rotate. And maybe there's an issue in that in itself, that it's hard to get any sort of rhythm when there's a constant change to the 11 of every game. But it is hard to believe you're looking at a Manchester Derby, a game of that importance, and maybe De Bruyne is struggling to get into that starting 11.
Yeah, I mean, on paper, but like you say, if you had the conversation we've just had, and like you've seen him in person, you realise he's not quite right. So if he's not playing well, then you can't, you know, it makes sense to take him out of the team. And look, if they didn't have many options, you'd still play De Bruyne and see how it goes. And, you know, probably like in that Burnley game, although I do expect it to be harder on Saturday than that Burnley game, he might come up with something even when he's not playing at his best. But when you've got Bernardo Silva and Gundogan, who are a very good midfield pair, I'd play them, I think, especially as Gundogan. If they're going to play a false nine, he can get into the box and score those goals. And obviously, you've got Rodri, the holding midfielder. So there's your midfield three straight away. Last season, De Bruyne was a false nine, and it wasn't the best De Bruyne we saw, but it got the best out of the team. But if he's not playing so well at the moment, I'll play Foden false nine. I think he's been pretty good. It didn't sound like you're too impressed by him in that role, but I think he's been pretty good there. And then I guess Grealish will play on the left. But you've got Sterling who could play. You've got Sterling who could play on the right. You've got Jesus Suarez.
What's the story with Sterling at the moment? Because obviously there was a bit of controversy a couple of weeks back when he did the interview and said he'd be interested in going and playing abroad if he's not going to play for Manchester City, if he's not going to be starting every week. Well, he's more than happy to leave. How did that go down inside Manchester City? And is that the moment where it really spelt the end for Raheem Sterling, whether it's January or next summer?
I don't know. I'm not sure if it's that definitive. But it's obviously, in terms of how it went down, it's not a new situation. He's into the last 2 years of his contract now. They were kind of floating towards that situation a few years ago, but he signed the new contract in the end, the long one. And they avoided that. Whereas with Sane said, well, I'm not signing if I'm not playing. And obviously, he eventually left on a reduced fee to Bayern Munich. And now Sterling is in a similar position, not playing, lost his place at the end of last season. Had a row with Guardiola about team selection, was dropped for a game. Plenty of chances to come back in. And of course, he played the Champions League final, which, if you look at the games he's played in since that Southampton game after the last derby, so start of March, if you look at the games he's played in, generally it's been when Guardiola's been resting the other players who you would say are in his strongest team.
Yeah.
But he played the Champions League final as well, which was a huge kind of leap of faith from Guardiola for a player who wasn't in great form. He's looked a little bit better of late. Looked quite bright on the right-hand side yesterday. And I know there's a lot of City fans who'd like to see him on the right-hand side and would like to see him in the right-hand side at the weekend. But yeah, he doesn't have an agent now. So the contract talks, you know, a little bit different. But he's not the star of the team as he was back then. He's been out of it. He's not been entirely happy. Guardiola, he gave a quote the other week. I was away, but I've seen it and I think I've got it right to say, in the last few weeks, he's been there, and Guardiola, you know, when you're solid and you're doing what he wants, he says, they're there, the team is there, the player is there. And he says, Sterling's been there the last few weeks, but, you know, it wasn't always like that in the last few months. So the performances haven't been there, maybe the attitude as well. There's been this kind of a lingering bad feeling between Guardiola and Sterling, certainly for a few months from March onwards. I couldn't tell you what it's like right this minute. But that explains why he's not been in the team so much. And if he's not in the team with a contract situation looming and talks to go on, then yeah, it'd be stupid to rush into it. Also, you would have seen John Stones, basically, they were planning to sell him. And then he got in the team last season, turned things around, and he got a new contract because he only had 1 year left. I think he's on about 250 grand a week. And you just think that's the leverage you're in. So let's say Sterling turns it around as a blitz for the last 6 months of the season, scores loads of goals, they win trophies. He's got a year left on his contract. He's already on a huge money anyway. He could get even more. So for me, I was always thinking, it makes no sense for him to rush to sign this deal. But yeah, there's a bit of a standoff. And him admitting that he'd go elsewhere, because he's a clever bloke, he knows how the football media works. For him admitting that, it shows you the situation there. It's far from perfect. But I suppose, like I say, I couldn't tell you for sure if it's definitive or not. But
yeah. It's a hard front three to find your way into when you look at the form of Phil Foden. You've just spent £100 million on Jack Grealish and also the former Riyad Mahrez, who is their top scorer this season across all competitions.
Well, yeah, but he's barely played. That's crazy. He got four in the Champions League. Mm. I think he started... Because I was away for a couple of weeks.
Is he the most underestimated... And I know he was Footballer of the Year when he won the league with Leicester, but I'll put this out there that maybe Riyad Mahrez is the most technically gifted player in the Premier League in terms of his control of the ball, how he can manipulate a football. Like, at his best, he's as good as absolutely anybody.
There's an argument for it, for sure. In terms of that technique, obviously, the first touch and manoeuvre in the ball, yeah. I mean, if you think of somebody similar, Salah, and obviously Salah's got a load more goals, and Foden's very similar as well. Underappreciated, perhaps, at City. Not a typical City player, especially now, like I mentioned earlier on, the way that the wingers tend to play, they're a bit less explosive. Probably a bit underappreciated. He probably had his best... He had a good season in the season when City finished second. And, you know, it finished with no fans in the stadium. And probably that went under the radar a bit. Last season, very good. No fans in the stadium again. This season, the fans are back in and he's not in the team. So probably underappreciated a bit in that sense. But yeah, he was frustrating in the first season, as a lot of wingers are. Seen as selfish. I know some of the players have had a go at him for holding on to the ball too much, but obviously they appreciate the other stuff he does. And when he does use the ball well, he uses it very well. So he's one of those players, it's frustrating to watch, you know, when you see a winger cutting back inside and you know he's going to do it and he does it anyway and gets tackled. You just think, what is this guy doing? And that's the abiding memory a lot of City fans have had. And you know what it's like in football. When you've got an idea in mind like that, it's very difficult to shake it, whether it's a positive impression or a negative impression. If performances start going the other way, it takes a hell of a long time for that impression to change. And I think that's something Mahrez has had to deal with. But like you say, he's done almost everything humanly possible to turn that around. Last season, he was very good. Scored 3 goals out of the 4 in the Champions League semi-finals. And yeah, like you say, top scorer already this season. He's barely played 4 in the Champions League. So he's not always had the best attitude as well. In the first season, he was kind of not happy about not playing all the time. This season, he's not playing all the time, but obviously he's playing well enough because he's scoring the goals when he comes in. He's doing all he can. So yeah, fair play to him.
Just to finish up, Sam, when we talk about superstar players and contracts and they start getting into the last 18 months, everybody starts to get a little bit nervous. Pep Guardiola's entering the last 18 months after Christmas, and as I think more or less made it clear that he will be leaving in 2023. That's going to add another dynamic, because very quickly people will start talking about, well, who's next? And yeah, it could be quite destabilizing for Manchester City over the next 18 months if there is this long farewell for Pep Guardiola.
Yeah, I mean, the idea about being destabilized, I do think that's a media thing and something that we're, you know, including myself in, something that we're guilty of. I suppose the best way to back that up is this 2019, in fact, it wasn't even that. It was last season when they were still struggling at the start of the season and his contract was up. It would have been the last year of his contract as it stood. Everyone thought he was going to go. And it was all, oh, is it destabilizing them? They're not playing well. Excuse me, sorry. Is it a distraction? And then he signed the contract and they still played badly for another 3 or 4 weeks. And it was only when he made the tactical changes in the team and he put players in better positions, you know, Gundogan was very deep. All of a sudden now he was getting into the box. Cancelo was allowed to get all the way forward, like kind of revolutionised how a fullback plays. He went back to having wide wingers, which stretched teams a bit more. Foden kind of emerged more on the left. Sterling played a bit on the right. Everything just clicked into gear with the tactical changes. And it was nothing to do with the contract. I think if it had been the contract, they'd have been better straight away. But I remember, I think it was the first game after he signed that new deal, they went to Tottenham. And it was one of those classic bad City performances where they miss a couple of chances, the other team score. And it doesn't matter if there's an hour left or a day left or a week left, they never score it. And that was the case when he signed the contract. So, yeah, next season, don't get me wrong, I doubt he'd sign one in the summer. He'd probably wait and see how it goes, but I suppose it depends. If they win the title, maybe he'd be persuaded. But I wouldn't be surprised if we got into next season, a couple of months in, and it's all we'll be talking about. Is he going to go? Who's coming next? Maybe he's already said he's going to go. And then it's going to be his farewell season. If they don't win the title this season, it's going to be, can he win it again? Can he reinvent them again? And all of a sudden, the conversation would be, oh, well, if he doesn't win it this year, it will be 3 titles in 7 years. Is that good enough? You can see these narratives starting to build. And that's when you can see maybe not a distraction because the players would maybe still be focused, but it's certainly going to be all we talk about. Do you know what I mean? Every time I come on the show, it's going to be, what's going on with Man City? Is it the contract? What's going to happen with Guardiola? Who's coming in next? It's a very difficult situation. And yeah, that's why when people were saying, oh, why are they getting Kane? Why are they getting Grealish? They're already so good. Because there are no guarantees in football. If you don't win the title this year, all of a sudden it's the last year next year and everyone's saying, what's going on? Can you do it again? Has it been worth all the hassle? They need to, you know, put the hammer down while they're on top. That's why he was so annoyed they didn't get a striker. And that's why he's kind of trying everything to do it this year. But you're right, you know, this time next year, if he's not signed a new contract or if he said he's leaving or whatever, it's going to be whatever's happening on the pitch, it's going to be what's going on with Guardiola, what's going to happen in the future, who's it going to be? It'll be a bit of a pain in the ass, actually.
Sam, great stuff as always. Yeah, we've got a good 18 months to talk about it, so let's come back to that again.
Yeah, nice one. Thanks a lot, Nathan. See you later.
Sam Lee there from The Athletic, and not just the Manchester Derby, but also West Ham against Liverpool is going to be live on Super Sunday, only on Sky Sports. All our football coverage is brought to you by Sky.